morning, honorable members, good morning, DG, and your team here. And morning, good morning, everybody. Let's start with the meeting. My apologies for coming late. Okay, let's start with the apologies. There's an apology of the minister who's attending a cabinet committee meeting. And the DM is also attending a cabinet committee meeting. So both of them are not going to be able to join us. Other than those, no other apologies except for Professor Bozoli. We've got a standing apology from her. Okay, so today we are dealing with the scientific stuff. A couple of last week, we were dealing with the issues that involve higher education and training. So today we are dealing with science and technology. We'd like to get some update about the SKA. And the other issues that the Department of Science and Innovation would like to brief us on. So we are then going to go straight to the DG and your team will just get the introduction, everybody introduce himself. I know one of the things that the members will notice from your delegation is that it's gender insensitive. So you don't have a women scientist there in the department, and so yeah. Okay, DG, is there anything from the members? Nothing. Okay, DG.
Thanks very much, Chair. Let me then start with the apology.
Sorry, Chair.
It's point of before.
Yeah, no, before we proceed.
Okay.
Right, I thought we should. I only got the apologies from the Minister DM and Honorable Bozoli. And I think there's like two that are not here. Perhaps if we are told what's happening.
Oh, there's also an apology from Honorable Mukacha, the whip. We know that she's in Singapore. I forgot that one. And that is the only one. I guess not that I is still on his way. DG?
Thanks, Chairperson. As we say, we apologize for the delegation, perhaps an oversight, and maybe this was rushed and I didn't pay attention to that. I will try and correct that next time. So I don't know if the colleagues want to introduce themselves before I do the presentation, maybe starting with Don and what your role is in the SK.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Don De Tuey. I'm the Deputy Director General in the Department of Science and Innovation, responsible for international cooperation and resources.
Rob Adam, Managing Director of the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory and Head of the SKA project in South Africa.
I'm Takarani Namangani, the Director responsible for SKA. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Daniel Adams, I'm the Acting DDG for Research, Development and Support.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. My understanding is that we'll do both presentation, the one briefing the committee on the Meerkat SKA, and then the other one on the intergovernmental organization, and Dan will do that, and then okay, thank you.
There's a gentleman there, you looked at him and he just smiled. I don't know that the smile, what does it represent? Because you are happy with being here.
No, the smile represents the AGSA, so I'm from the Office of the Auditor General.
Yeah, I can introduce yourself.
My name is Puleng Molapo. I was currently involved in the SKA project. In fact, we were auditing the project at NRF.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Now we know that it's a rep from the AGSA. Thank you, DG Proceed.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and thanks for the opportunity again to continue to brief you on the work that we're doing. So I want to start by just sharing why are we involved in the SKA and astronomy in general. Is that we have a geographic advantage in South Africa and Southern Africa in particular, as you will see later on. We've got clear skies and radio quiet area in the Karoo. We also, as we were motivating for putting this in one of the strategies, started thinking about what returns will the country get if we do get involved in this. So there are scientific returns, and we'll give the details of this further down in the presentation, where we have seen a huge growth in the scientific outputs. We also thought we would get technological returns, such as reviving local manufacturing industry, and take advantage of the big data that comes with hosting a telescope of this kind and others. And then the ability to train the next generation of scientists, but also skills that are needed by these new industries, big data analytics. We have up to date provided, just for this project, over 1,000 bursaries and grants. And then there are socio-economic returns, including educational improvements, job creation to communities around Carnarvon and the growth of small, medium enterprises, and we'll share the details of this again further down the line. And then also the ability to work with our partners in the rest of the continent. So this has helped us to strengthen the institutional capacities in the continent, but also collaboration, as well as working closely with international partners, which also helps us to attract foreign direct investment, skills transfer, and technological exchange. And then historically, astronomy started 200 years. In 2020, we'll be celebrating 200 years. The South African Astronomy Observatory around the corner has got some smaller telescopes and recently invested 300 million through the NRF, of course, with the Southern African Large Telescope in Sutherland. In the radio astronomy area, the dish in HTBS Wook, the Hutt Rao, was donated by NASA 50 years ago. And then in the Karoo, we have, over the last couple of years, invested in seven dish array around 2010, and then 64 dishes, the Meerkat array, completed last year. And in the next 2 to 3 years, we hope to get the 190-odd dishes as part of phase one of the SKA. And then we felt that it is important, whilst we're waiting for phase two of the SKA, to have a project that links a number of dishes in the continent, which is called the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network. We also, even though we don't have this in South Africa, we also participate in the region, Southern African region, in gamma ray astronomy. In Namibia, there is a telescope called HESS telescope, which I think in the last 10 or 15 years has been located there. And what this means, therefore, is that in the Southern African region, we are involved in a number of wavelengths of astronomy activities, and we then approved a strategy for this multi-wavelength astronomy. It was approved in 2016. So this
Chair, you said today is about science. This is a slide that all astronomers show wherever you go in global astronomy meetings. That justifies why, as a human race, we do astronomy. So what this slide shows is the origins of the universe on the extreme left. And then the extreme right, if you like, the cone opening is where we are. So the developments that have happened in the universe are then captured with this slide that shows what has happened 13.7 billion years after the Big Bang. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of, on the left-hand side is the Big Bang, and then you'll see on the graph that the first stars were formed about 400 million years after the Big Bang. And then you'll see that halfway through this graph, you see the development of galaxies, planets, and then now we have what is called the dark energy accelerated expansion. So the scientists are saying, we would like to know, why are we having this accelerated expansion? What is causing it in order to understand the universe? And for that reason, the key questions, therefore, that radio or astronomers are trying to understand is the dark energy that is probably responsible for the expansion of the universe. And the fact that we only understand 4% of the normal matter, and there's 21% of dark matter that we fully don't understand, and therefore these astronomy instruments all over the world are trying to understand these deep scientific questions. And this slide is also trying to explain the same thing. If you can see on the right, I did indicate that halfway through that slide that I showed, there were first stars and galaxies that were formed, and galaxy evolution over that period, dark matter, large-scale structure, and possibly the telescope would also explore the unknown that we don't even know. And then it will also assist scientists to test general relativity, also cradle of life, planets, molecules, and terrestrial activities or cosmic magnetism as well. So it will really test a range of things that we as human beings don't fully understand. So maybe just two slides to explain radio astronomy, because the telescope is in the spectrum of radio waves. You will see at the bottom the spectrum that shows the different wavelengths, starting on the right with X-rays that we are all familiar with, that when we are sick, X-rays are used to take pictures of our chests and our bodies. And then you have visible light in the middle of the spectrum. So this is the wavelengths of the things that we can see with our normal light. And then on the right, on the left, you can see infrared. That's what we use to communicate with our remote controls. That's in the infrared and microwave. We're all familiar with these wavelengths in our homes. And then the radio waves are on the longer wavelength side. And then at the top, we're just indicating that in the universe, you've got therefore these signals that are in this radio wave spectrum. And as I said, because you can't see them, we have these dishes, these reflectors, and the 64 that we have in the Karoo. And what these dishes do is they act as a mirror that then focuses these radio waves onto the receiver. And then that receiver then collects all of this information. And in the next slide, which you may not have because it's later in your slide pack, but we've brought it here. What this slide shows is that at the top, the 64 dishes that we have that are then picking up these radio waves, focusing them on the receiver, it goes into a processing facility in the Karoo, in the Karoo,
and then it starts to take all of this data that is picked up by the DCC and processes it, and then through a link, a 20 gigabit per second link, it goes here in the Cape Town at the Center for High Performance Computing, where there are about 10 to 12 racks that are then processing this data. And this data can then be sent to the scientists that then try and make sense of this data. So now we've explained how why you get involved in radio astronomy. What we'd like to do as a second part is, what is actually the Square Kilometer Array? So it's a global project that endeavors to build the largest radio telescope and will become the largest scientific infrastructure in Africa and the world. The original concept was to build a collecting area of 1 square kilometer. But because to construct a dish of that magnitude, it would be difficult and probably, as I say, engineeringly not so easy, you then have these small dishes in an array format that are equivalent to a square kilometer of collecting area. So that's where the square kilometer array comes from, that instead of building a dish that is 1 square kilometer, we have a set of small dishes that put together are equivalent to a collecting area of 1 square kilometer. So the telescope is 5 times more sensitive than any existing instrument. 3,000 antennas will be spread out from the core, and then there are remote stations from the core up to 3,000 kilometers. It's also a massive data machine, because it will have data rates that exceed the entire global internet traffic. So that gives you a scale of the data that the telescope will be collecting. For that reason, you'll need a fastest supercomputer ever built. And then also it will give an opportunity to advance technologies that I think are important for the fourth industrial revolution. Mm-hmm. So there are 3 sites for the Square Kilometer Array. There is the headquarters based in Manchester in the United Kingdom. And then here in South Africa we'll be hosting some dishes, and Australia will also host some dishes. And the whole project will be governed through an intergovernmental organization, and we'll talk about that in the next presentation. There are 13 international member countries that are involved, and over 100 organizations across 20 countries that are participating in the design and the development of this Square Kilometer Array. It also gives you the size of the partners and the people who are involved. And then there are 8 African countries that are involved as partners to host the outer stations. So this is a graph that shows that we will host the antennas in Africa, which are mid-frequency antennas, and then the bottom one shows the low-frequency antenna that will be hosted in Australia. Again, this is a slide, Chair, which shows the different member countries that are involved in the Square Kilometer Array, and I would leave that to the members. You can see UK, Sweden, Spain, South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, India, Italy, Canada, China, and many, many, many others. And then the partner countries, as we've said, is Botswana, Ghana, Mozambique, Madagascar, Namibia, Kenya, and I might have left one or two. So because of the costs associated with this big instrument, the members decided that it would be perhaps better to build the telescope in phases. In South Africa, we started off with the 7 dishes in 2010, just to learn how to just build dishes. And you'll still find these 7 dishes if you do visit the site. I think, Rob, they're still available, the 7 dishes. Yeah. Still there, and they're still doing some science, but it was just a part of learning how to build NRA. And then the 64-dish array has been completed. It was launched by the Deputy President last year in July. And then we are now, I think, in the final stages, because we serve on the board of the SKA, to have the first phase where the SKA organization will build 133 dishes to add onto the 64 meerkat dishes that are already on site. So this will make sure that we have 197 dishes in South Africa. And the distance between the core and how far from the core would be 80 kilometers. So this will happen between 2020 and 2025 with a budget of 850 million euros. So different partner countries through an agreement of how the different countries would contribute towards this 850 million euros. And then phase two, after the 197 dishes have been completed, will then hopefully start beyond 2025. And this will then take the 3,000 dishes up to a baseline of 3,000 kilometers, and then the full dense aperture array of 250 stations with 180 kilometer baseline. And as I've said, this will be in Australia, so that will be the full square kilometer array. So this is a picture that gives you the dishes, or an impression of the dishes, the 64 meerkat dishes on the core in Carnarvon. And these are operational, and if the chair would like to have the detail of where we are, we would be more than happy to ask Dr. Rob Adam to indicate where this process is now. We've also, under the guidance of the board of the SKA, have been exploring the possibility of adding 20 dishes on site. And this is a project that is jointly funded by Max Planck Gesellschaft, MPG in Germany, and South African Radio Astronomy Observatory at a cost of 774.4 million. It involves additional infrastructure, foundation roads, power, fiber, water supply, and security. And what it does is it helps to enhance the scientific capability of the current 64-dish array, and it further prepares the scientists for SKA phase one of the 197 dishes. It also reduces the schedule pressure for the SKA phase one, and it demonstrates concrete progress to SKA funding stakeholders and boosts confidence in the project, in the sense that there is something happening between the 64-dish array and phase one, which will start hopefully 2020, 2021. And from the South African perspective, this is helping the staff that we have in the office, because they are not sitting idle. They would be involved in yet some activities between now and the time that phase one is being built. And this is just a picture that shows the dishes and how they are located from the core. The core is the one that you see in the middle, and then these are the 20 dishes that with Max Planck Gesellschaft will be rolled out as part of this expansion of phase one. You probably also don't have this slide, but we just thought when we talk about 3 kilometers baseline from the core, let's just give you an impression of what that means. And each dot that you see in each country represents 25 dishes. So you can see that on the east side, the baseline will take dishes all the way up to Mauritius, which will host one station of 25 dishes, and you'll see a dot in Madagascar, so they will also host some station. You will see about 4 stations, if I'm not mistaken, in Botswana, 3 stations in Namibia, 1 station in Zambia, 1 in Mozambique, and then on the sort of northern part, northeast part, be one station in Kenya, and then on the western part, there will be one station located in Ghana. But as I say, each station containing about 25 dishes. So that's what we mean by 3,000 kilometer baseline. So it also gives you a sense of how big this telescope would be. So this is the configuration of the dishes in South Africa. Again, each dot representing 25 stations. And you can see that the bulk of these dishes are hosted around the Carnarvon area. So this is how the spiral look like of SKA. Now, because astronomy has to happen in certain conditions, an act was passed in 2007, which is called Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act, which gives the minister powers to protect Northern Cape as an astronomy reserve. Just as we have areas for wildlife that are protected through some act of parliament, so this is an act of parliament that was passed to make sure that the dark skies in Sutherland remain unpolluted for optical astronomy, where we have the Southern African Large Telescope and other telescopes, of course, and that we continue to have a radio quiet area in Carnarvon for the Meerkat telescope and the square kilometer array, and that, of course, we continue to have the facilities that allow us to host the other telescopes. We talked about the high-energy stereoscopic system in Namibia, HESS as it is called, which is a gamma-ray telescope. And then, of course, we have the RDPS Hook Radio Observatory, which we have talked about. And these pictures on the right just gives you an impression of the Southern African Large Telescope, some dishes, I think that's the Hadrall dishes, and then the dish at the bottom is the dish in Namibia. So this act is being implemented through the Astronomy Management Authority unit that was established within the department to implement the act, and regulations to regulate the activities in the reserve have been promulgated through public participation processes, and service provider in the area are now applying for permits to operate through this Astronomy Management Authority. And we've also entered into agreements with a number of sister departments to ensure the harmonious coexistence of the telescope with other activities. We have an agreement with the Department of Defense, ICASA, and the Department of Communication and Digital Technologies, for instance. We are also having negotiations with the Department of Transport on aviation issues, and minerals and energy on making sure that the mining activities are done in collaboration with ourselves so that they could coexist with the telescope. So I will now spend the next couple of minutes, Chair, with the scientific returns that we talked about at the beginning, starting with the scientific returns that we have seen ourselves in the global ranking moving from 33 to 21, and the size of the astronomy community has tripled over the last 15 years from roughly 60 PhD astronomers to over 200, and the pipeline of honors, masters and PhD students is increasing. We have over 1,000 bursaries that have been awarded to young people to study astronomy-related activities, with 15% of the money being allocated to partner countries, so students from the rest of the countries that I showed earlier on. And then these bursaries span from undergraduate to postdoc in astrophysics, engineering, computing studies, and artisanal and technical skills. And we also have 6 astronomy research chairs in South Africa, which has been excellent because it has allowed South Africa to grow the size of the astronomy community and research community in particular. And this has helped us to attract international renowned leading astronomers. This just shows the growth in the number of refereed papers and the index that I talked about earlier on that has shown us being ranked from 39 to about 23, and shows that we are a good country to do astronomy in. And we've also benefited from the knowledge, of course, and the training of students. This is the picture that was taken by the Meerkat telescope during the launch. Scientists say it's never been seen before because it has given scientific community an opportunity to see the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And everywhere where we go, people say this is an indication that the instrument is working very, very well, and they are looking forward to more pictures. It's a pity, Chair, we can't show you the this picture when you can actually show how you get resolution on what is happening on this galaxy in a finer detail than it has ever been done before. So I think we're not even doing justice to this picture. But again, should Rob wish to add anything on what it means, we're more than happy to do. Rob?
Chair, that's a picture of the Milky Way galaxy from Earth, and that's 25,000 light years away. In other words, the light from there has taken 25,000 years to get to us. Now, why did we have this picture at the inauguration? Well, it was kind of a brag picture, if you like, because it's a bit like taking a photograph into the sun. You lose detail, you lose clarity simply because the sun is so bright. So what that picture shows is that we have, when you look at the center of the Milky Way in the radio frequencies, what you see is effectively a bright source. And so what that picture says is actually we can take a picture of this. This is better than anything anyone else can do. And so that's why we, in a sense, it was announcing our arrival, the use of that picture at the launch last year. It turns out that there is, and you'll see over the next few months, other publications coming out on this where we've gone into greater detail where you can see exactly what's going on at the center of the galaxy, which is, you know, where there's a massive black hole there. If you look at that picture there, the very bright part, that is, it shows particles falling into that black hole at the center of the universe. And as you go out, it becomes more orange and red, and that means there's less radioactivity there. But what it shows is many, many charged particles falling into the black hole at the center. And what we'll see going forward with this particular development is many theories about the Milky Way will be tested. We can see which ones are right, which ones are wrong, and it gives a much clearer picture about what's going on with our galaxy. Of course, that's not the only thing we're interested in. There are many other scientific questions, and particularly those on this one slide that the DG showed just now. I don't know whether that helps, Chair.
No, we appreciate the explanation. It does. We get a sense of what's happening, although it's still at a very abstract, high-level kind of thing, but I'm sure if we take a course 101 in astronomy, we'll understand. But proceed.
Thanks, Chair. So this is a picture that was taken when there was a state visit between South Africa and China, and this picture was also shown as part of the scientific capabilities that we have in South Africa. The second return is the technological returns. So we have been able to revive the local high-end printed circuit board manufacturing industry through some of the circuit boards that were developed so that you can process the data that I indicated is converted by the receivers of the 64 dish array. And then also design to sample signal directly at receiver, which does not have electronic interference in frequency bands that I think the telescope has to operate in. And equipment is expected to last for 30 years in extreme Karoo environment. And also that the Meerkat components, 75% of them, were sourced locally. And that the Meerkat data center has the fastest supercomputer in Africa, built at a fraction of the cost by South Africa. And so if you do visit the site, you will have the opportunity to actually see this computing facility that is processing this data from the 64 dish array. This is a picture that shows the designed and constructed components of the dishes that are in the Karoo. At the bottom, you'll see the actual mold making the dish, and then the pillars or the pedestals, you can see them also all locally built. We've also taken full advantage of the fact that large amounts of data, as we indicated, will be generated by the telescope to establish a regional data center led by UCT consortium. And then we've also, with a number of universities led by Wits University, developed a multidisciplinary e-science master's degree. It's a postgraduate teaching and training platform. And then we have a research chair on big data and radio astronomy, which is hosted at UCT and UWC. And the newly established Salt Black University introduced the first dedicated undergraduate degree in data science. And then we have a big Data Africa program that is aimed at building computing capabilities in partner countries to prepare them for the data that will come out of these instruments, the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network and the SKA. And we have recently upgraded the Center for High Performance Computing Facilities to petascale to meet the data demands of both the Meerkat and the Square Kilometer Array. So we've really put all the necessary infrastructure, the training for taking advantage of this big data that will come out of the telescope. And then, of course, we have a national integrated cyber infrastructure system. As you can see, the computing services on the left provided by the Center for High Performance Computing, the networking services provided by the South African National Research Education Network, SANREN, data services, as well as I say, the skills and expertise that you need to take full advantage of this data. And of course, we are training people in areas of health, energy, human society, bioinformatics, e-agriculture, and environment. And therefore, people who are trained in analyzing data from astronomy can then find themselves in data analytics in the areas that are shown here. You've seen this picture around the data processing from the 64 dishes into the processing building and then link to the Center for High Performance Computing in Cape Town. So we have talked about the significant and generic big data deliverable from the Meerkat project with the 20 petabyte self-storage system that is used for the Meerkat Tier 0 archive hosted at the Center for High Performance Computing. So this CEF storage system was developed at the CERN in Geneva, the Center for Nuclear Research, European Center for Nuclear Research, for its archiving of the data that comes from that facility. And the Meerkat processing, science processing team have very successfully transferred the software platform to South Africa. Sure, the chair would know that in CERN, again, you have a very big instrument that is trying to simulate what happens when particles collide, and then you get other particles that have got to be tracked. So again, it's another instrument that has large data that must be generated, must be stored, and must be analyzed. So this system of storage that was developed there has now been brought to South Africa because the challenges are exactly the same. So the hardware is based on the storage ports that were developed by the Meerkat team in partnership with the local SMME Parallax at a fraction of the cost
of equivalent hardware in the market. So again, you can see that by playing around with these technologies and trying to solve these problems, you begin to have SMMEs also benefiting from this technology development that is required by the telescope. So Ceph is an open source software platform designed to provide highly scalable object, block, and file-based storage under a unified system. And then Sorayo uses Ceph to synthesize a 20 petabyte object-based storage system for the data generated by South Africa's Meerkat radio telescope. So hopefully you've got a sense of what this is. And these are some of the innovation on big data as a driver for the fourth industrial revolution. We've talked about the computing capabilities and the software and other intermediary facilities that have been developed. On the socio-economic returns, we've invested in youth, community upliftment programs, development of small medium enterprising, identifying and nurture talent among young learners, and ensuring that communication connectivity is not compromised. Just to give you, Chair and Honorable Members, a sense of the investment that have been made in the Karoo, 420 spent through the construction of the 7 Karoo Array Telescope and Meerkat on local suppliers and contractors. 1 million spent on training 351 people by major contractors. The Stratcom set that was building the dishes. 1.7 million on material sourced from local suppliers for the building of another telescope on the site, which is called Hydrogen Epoch of Reionization Array, HERA, American Array. 7,284 total number of employment opportunities created through the construction of the telescopes, and the number of TVET-funded students in the Northern Cape since 2011, 72, and then the number of SKA-funded students from local communities to universities, about 14. So the schools program in Carnarvon, this is the high school where kids have access to learning materials through iPads and laptops. On the job training, contractors forum, local expertise and business development and community knowledge center. So the facilities that are hosted in the Northern Cape include the technical training center. We are now finalizing the start of the building of the Carnarvon Exploratorium. Engineering Operations Center will be based there. We also are hoping to position the Northern Cape in terms of downstream big data opportunities, working with Salt Blakey and the Northern Cape government. Just a few words about the Carnarvon Exploratorium is that the department, the South African Radio Astronomy Observatory, Department of Tourism, Northern Cape Government and Kariepek Municipality are collaborating then to build state-of-the-art visitor center in Carnarvon. So you'll have an opportunity to visit the center and you'll be able to see the telescope, the data that is being analyzed, and maybe that picture evolving chair as the next generation of the center of the Milky Way is being demonstrated and what it means. So if you want scientists to explain what this means, that will be done there. The first phase of the project is budgeted at $60 million and will be funded by ourselves, Sorayo, and the Department of Tourism, and we hope that it will increase tourism in Carnarvon, create jobs, support education and learning, and promote entrepreneurship with those that will be building exhibits in the center. So turning event is planned for later this year in Carnarvon, and of course the committee will be invited. And then we have a full-time stakeholder manager that is based in Carnarvon to engage communities on an ongoing basis. And we have a memorandum of understanding of Sorayo with Agri Northern Cape and work on joint initiatives to address the concerns of affected farming communities. And we participate as a department in the Northern Cape SKA working group that brings together all relevant provincial departments and municipalities to ensure that what needs to be provided by the local municipality or the provincial government is planned jointly. We did talk about the Human Capital Development Program, where we provide bursaries for the scholarships of over 1,000 students, and 607 of these degrees have been awarded to Black South Africans and 275 to South African women. And then 97% honors, 94% for masters, and 92%. So people tend to pass with higher rates, or the graduation rates are much, much higher in this program than in the normal programs. And then 24% of the graduates, postgraduate, are employed by Sarajevo, 37% by universities and national facilities, and 19% into the rest of the South African high-tech industry. So we think this is a good return of the skills and the human capacity development program. So this is just a picture of the postgraduate scholarship conference that is held every year. And then this is just a technician and artisan training program, just giving you pictures of this, and the graduate internship program that I think is also hosted, and the HCD alumni working group for Sarajevo, that shows that it has produced a number of South Africans with high valued and scarce skills required by the Meerkat in the SKA. And this list just gives you the list of the young people that have now been absorbed by the project, having been trained in the project. And then we have a schools program, as I say, focusing on the Carnarvon High School. It's the only school in the area that's offering maths and science and support for teachers, and then provide school bursaries for grades 8 to 12 learners, and 15 matriculants awarded university undergraduate bursaries, science camps to prepare learners for examinations, Lego robotics programs at 5 schools in the area, a reading literacy program at Carnarvon Primary School. And then lastly, Chair, we just wanted to share with you what we are doing to have partnership with our colleagues in the rest of the continent. We talked about this array that connects telescopes all over the world, and you can see that in some parts of the world, like in the US, you have a number of telescopes that are connected. In Europe, quite a number, in Australia. But you can see that there was only one telescope that was part of this network in Africa, in RTP-SUK. So this project, the South African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Project, is meant to prepare the partner countries not to wait until the dishes for phase two are in their countries, the 3,000 baseline that I showed earlier on. So the project, the AVN, is meant to link together widely separated radio telescopes, and at the moment it involves conversion of old redundant dishes that were used for satellite communication and convert them into dishes that can do radio astronomy. So the AVN is an intervention to maintain political interest in the SKA, but also to fill the gap in the rest of the continent for the global very long base interferometry sciences, essentially for geodesy, global positioning system, and others. So it's a very important network to help, I think, us to understand what's happening in the continents moving closer or apart. GPS system, which is important for navigation systems. So the project was initially funded through the African Renaissance Fund from DECO. We're running out of funds now, so we'll go back and see whether we can put another proposal, because we haven't completed the conversion of these dishes in partner countries in the continent. And every year the minister hosts ministers from these partner countries, and this helps to bring ministers of the partner countries up to speed. And the Center for High Performance Computing has been rolling out high performance computing and training in each of the partner countries. So these countries now have access to these computing facilities, and they are being then trained on both putting them together, but also to start analyzing data using these. And at the moment, we are looking at co-locating the initiatives to explore possibilities of placing on-site space-based facilities. So thinking of putting some of these dishes alongside ground satellite tracking stations, GP stations, and there are discussions between the National Space Agency as well as the Development Bank of Southern Africa that has an interest in these co-location activities. And then we also are working with the UK government on the New Newton Fund on a training program which is called Radio Astronomy or Development in Africa through Radio Astronomy, which is a program that at the moment is training 60 young people on manipulating data. And I'm told that most of these young people are now finding work in the health area and the agricultural area, having been trained through this data program. So this is a picture of a dish on the left-hand side in Ghana that was a satellite dish, and that has now been completely converted to be a dish to do radio astronomy, so it will be part of this African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network. And we hope, as I've said, to continue to do this conversion in other partner countries as well. So one of the things that we talked about, Chair, as the last return, is that by having the facility in Carnarvon, we've now been approached by other governments and other countries to have astronomy instruments located in the reserve. So if you do get a chance to go there, you will see a number of other instruments that are located on site. We did talk about the Max Planck Gesellschaft from Germany that is looking at 20 additional dishes, but it also invested in a particular receiver on one of the dishes or in the dishes of the 64 dish array. And then there's other instrumentation from Germany, UK, EU and Australia, and there are standalone instruments by the UK and USA, the HERA instrument, and CBES, also UK and Australia, that is located on site. So this has attracted other countries to locate their instruments on site. So this is the dishes that you will see if you visit, which is this dish array that is looking at the hydrogen epoch of reionization during the early birth of the stars. And then on the 12th of March this year, a treaty was established to set up an intergovernmental organization, and the countries that signed the treaty are shown here: South Africa, Australia, China, Italy, the Netherlands, Portugal and the United Kingdom. And India and Sweden also took part in the negotiations to set up the IGO, but I don't think they have signed, but they have indicated the willingness to sign. So this is the SKA One Dish prototype that I think, in partnership with the Chinese government and Germany, I see a country at the bottom that looks like Italy, that has also, I think, invested in building this dish as one of the 20 dishes. We've also been working with Sand Parks to make sure that they manage the land. 120,000 hectares of land needs to be managed as part of this reserve. And then we concluded a strategic environmental assessment, I think last year, as part of just looking at whether what the environmental assessment is of building this large telescope in the Karoo. I think we've already talked about this. This is the picture that shows the configuration of the 133, maybe it's too small for you to see, built on the 64 Meerkat dish array. So I think that concludes the first part, Chair. With your permission, we can then ask the IGO process to be presented by Mr. Dantuto.
Thank you very much. The Meerkat 64 dish array is an investment by South Africa. So it's the 64 dishes that we have built. It was a precursor to the SKA. So it's all totally South African investment that have been made. And then SKA would be, as I indicated, it's in two phases. So it's a square kilometer array. This is building the array that will eventually be equivalent to 1 square kilometer collecting area. So phase one, 133 dishes would be added to the Meerkat 64 dish array, and that will then make SKA phase one. And then there will be phase two that will give the additional 3,000 dishes that will be spread all over South Africa. So actually, our Meerkat 64 is not actually the SKA, but it's a precursor to the SKA. Only when we have received 133 dishes added to the Meerkat will we then have phase one of the SKA. I hope that helps.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I think it's clear.
You may proceed, Honourable Chair.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. In his presentation, the Director General emphasised that a square kilometre array was a global partnership. It is arguably viewed by many the most exciting global partnership for science in the 21st century. And what makes it unique, of course, is that a significant part of the infrastructure is located in Africa, but Africa is also playing a leading part in all aspects of this international partnership. And more than that, it is the only international science partnership of its kind, which brings together at an intergovernmental level the BRICS nations, countries from Asia, Australasia, the Americas, Europe, and of course Africa. So it's a very powerful symbol of what these nations refer to as the soft power of science diplomacy, building global friendship and solidarity through science. So I will be elaborating a little bit more on the observatory, the legal instrument which was signed in March, reflecting on the purpose of that convention and why we needed to create an intergovernmental organization to govern the SKA project. And this really is all also with an eye, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, since our minister has written to the speaker, because the convention needs to be tabled in Parliament through of course, the Honorable Committee members as part of the process of ratification. So today is part of that
so
process.
Has it been submitted to Parliament?
Pardon?
Has it been submitted to Parliament?
No, it's in the process of being submitted.
Oh, okay.
So indeed, as the Director General also reflected, there's a slight error on the slide. It was the 12th of March this year, the convention was signed by Minister Kubaini Ngubane for South Africa. We expect that India and Sweden will sign in the coming months, but there are also ongoing discussions with the likes of France, of Spain, but further down the process, the likes of Japan, the Republic of Korea. So the point to emphasize is this is a growing global partnership. And even those governments who did not sign up to the convention will have the opportunity to accede to the convention and become members of the new organization in future. So it really was an historic event for international relations and science to have a convention which creates a new intergovernmental organization for a project with physical infrastructure in Africa and Australasia and a headquarters in the United Kingdom. The Honourable Members may be familiar, for example, with the CERN, the European Organisation for Nuclear Research, located in Geneva, Switzerland, which has been the birthplace for many a Nobel Prize in fundamental physics. So this organisation which is being established will be the CERN of the 21st century. Why we needed to go this route was that all the governments involved in the SKA was convinced that we needed to have a legal framework under international law to govern the construction and the actual operational phases of the global SKA project. The SKA has always been a global project dating back to its origins as a purely science initiative in the 90s. And currently, where we are in the so-called pre-construction phase, the governance of the global partnership is provided through a company which is incorporated in the United Kingdom under UK law. That's also why the headquarters is in Manchester. So the different countries participating are members of this company. In South Africa's instance, it's the National Research Foundation, which is the member of the company, but the Director General serves as South Africa's director, the voting director on the board, with Dr. Adam as the scientific director. So this model of a company of which different countries were members served as well for the design phase, the pre-construction phase, but progressing towards the more ambitious construction and operational phases, it was important to have a different governance model. And perhaps three key reasons. One was that for a large global project of this kind, which will involve international funding by several governments, it was important that relevant diplomatic privileges and immunities be afforded to the project. And that can only be done in international law to an organization which is established under international law. Private citizens or companies cannot enjoy diplomatic privileges and immunities. Here, for example, we speak about applicable dispensation of payment of customs and excise duties, etc. Perhaps most importantly, it was also important that this new international organization should have the flexibility to design its policies according to what the member governments deem best. Because if the partnership stayed a company in the United Kingdom, then the partnership would have to follow all UK rules and legislation. So the process of creating an intergovernmental organization like the United Nations or any other then takes the organization out of the national jurisdiction of where the headquarters is located. So this was, and perhaps a bit tongue in the cheek with foresight, also protects us from the upheaval of what's going to happen with Brexit. Not knowing how the situation, of course, there will be no impact on the physical location, but the point to emphasize is the partnership, even though located in the United Kingdom, will be able to design its own policies. And then also quite fundamental, it means that in terms of the commitment of the project, including the funding commitment, it is governments which sign up at the highest intergovernmental level. So it symbolizes and provides a bit of legal protection to the firm commitment of governments to the project. Just very briefly, and honorable members will of course see the convention when it is tabled here. In addition to the main text of the convention, there are also two protocols, one on the privileges and immunities, and which I could emphasize already here, that protocol is fully compliant with South African legislation regarding the privileges and immunities. During the negotiation process, there was a negotiating process spanning almost 3 years. The South African state law advisors of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation played a crucial role in the design of this protocol. And there's also a financial protocol which deals with the future financial rules of the partnership, which I will say a bit more. I think important to emphasize is also that the convention doesn't go into the detail of any of the future policies of the partnership, whether it's intellectual property, whether it's procurement. These are so-called Tier 2 documents which the Council will be the highest decision-making organ of the new organization, will approve once it is established. That also means that the act of signing the convention does not incur any legally binding financial commitments for the signatories. The signing of the convention and the creation of the organization in the Council is only the creation of the mechanism to take those future funding decisions. Also, and this was related to in the Director General's presentations, there will be in future also supplementary so-called hosting agreements to be concluded between both South Africa and Australia, as well as the United Kingdom, with regard to the hosting of the headquarters and the future organization, which will specifically relate to the rights and responsibilities of the host extension in March. We are awaiting the completion of ratification for the organization to be actually established. There's a structure called the Council Preparatory Task Force, which are working to prepare the decisions of this first council meeting, including those so-called tier documents I have referred to. And this also relates to the preparation of the, for example, accession of new members which will be joining the partnership. That's why I referred to the ongoing discussions with Germany, with France, with Spain. There's an option for so-called associated membership. The likes of Canada has already indicated that it will definitely associate, and these various policies. It's important to note that these structures do not make any decisions. They just prepare the documentation which will be approved in future by the Council. It's also in that forum where the discussions are starting about the funding commitments to the global project. Of course, the construction and the operational phases of the project will be funded by all global partners, and the Director General is personally leading South Africa's participation in those funding negotiations which are unfolding. So where we are now, the convention will enter into force, and this new organization, the SK Observatory, can only be created when the convention enters into force, when a minimum of 5 of the signatories have completed ratification, and amongst those 5 should be the 3 hosts, including South Africa, Australia, and the United Kingdom. We presently anticipate that minimum of 5 ratifications will be achieved by the middle of 2020, which means the organization could be established and the council could be convened in the second half of 2020. The Netherlands has already completed its ratification. Apparently, the Dutch parliamentary procedures provide for speedy processing of these documents. Australia and the United Kingdom are in the same stage where we are starting with this tabling in Parliament. Of course, from a South Africa's national perspective, it would be important for us to progress to the completion of ratification as soon as possible, because the creation of the new organization and the convening of that council, that's the trigger point for the decision to be made for the international funding, the international investment which will come to South Africa to be made available, so we can actually start progressing to the start of the SKA project. But of course, honourable members, through the proper channels, the convention will be tabled before you and Parliament for the proper ratification process. Thank you very much.
Okay. So if I may ask, what is the relationship between this intergovernmental organization and the UN? Is it not part of the system of United Nations?
It is not. It's not part of the United Nations family of organizations. Some aspects of the rules of the organization were, for want of a better word, borrowed from the UN system, the typical provisions which relates to arbitration and so forth. And we also follow, for example, the UN processes for the depository of the convention of completion of ratification.
So why is it,
but it's independent of the UN. The UN, it's not a UN.
Yeah, but where are the member countries depositing their instrument of ratification?
With the United Kingdom as the host of
the headquarters.
With the foreign
so it's a voluntary that involves only selected countries.
Yes, it's completely, it's a partnership which is open to any country, but it's voluntary. It depends on the government deciding that country wants to participate in the project. Now that we've signed the convention and once the council will be created, then the admission of any new members will require the approval of the existing members. But okay. It's in principle open to any country who wants to join.
Okay. So when do you anticipate to bring the protocol, what is the convention here?
I as far as there's a process of a letter from our minister to both the chair of the National Council of Provinces.
So you have to take it through cabinet?
It's been to cabinet. I should have said that. Before we signed, Honourable Chair, there were two cabinet memorandums, so we had, it was full cabinet approval for the signature of the convention.
Okay. All right. Because it's a... So the sooner you bring it, the better, so that we can then consider it in the next term, before December. It's not legislation, it's just a...
National agreement.
So we can host the one public hearing, and then we then request the House to approve it. So it will require both Houses or just one? National Assembly.
My understanding, Honourable Chair, it's both.
It's both.
Yeah.
Is that so? Okay. Okay, that's the presentation. Members, the first one was very, very high level. I hope you understood the explanation about that picture. The more the doctor was explaining, the more I was getting confused. What is this now? So maybe we need some crash courses on some of these things so that we understand. But I think maybe it will be better for us to visit. That should be one of the first sites that we must visit as a portfolio committee. It's a very exciting project. All of us know about it, because I think it has been sufficiently profiled nationally. But we have not been there, so some of these things may appear to be abstract because we have not really seen the site and been taken through so that we understand. But it's a very important national project that we must go and visit. At the earliest oversight week, I think we must start from there. Maybe go and see the center of, what is the center of high performance? This one we can just drive in one of the days when we are here in Cape Town. It's because it's here in Cape Town. We may start with this one, and then later on we can go to the Karoo and go see what's happening there. But I think the sooner you bring the convention, the better, so that we can then, because we have to take it through public hearing, we have to get South Africans to participate in that process, so that when we take it to Parliament, to the House, at least we have obtained the views of the community. So I'm going to take hands, Honorable Yabo. Mananiso, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Getsi, and then Litsi, and then Honorable Notata. Welcome, Honorable Tom. In that order.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to welcome the presentations from the department as well as the team that is handling the SKA. I must say it's a new day. It's a new day in Africa that for the very few times, Africa being a dark continent that it, as it has been historically called, is now working to our advantage in the development of the sciences. So the darkness of the Karoo is now a beneficial factor to us hosting such a project of great magnitude. In actual fact, now we have got bragging rights over the Hadron Collider. The Hadron Collider had been one of the foremost scientific developments in scientific in the scientific world for quite a while. finally we get to take the cup in South Africa. But I must say, Chair, one of the things that I want to speak about is how I picked up that this project almost acts as an accelerator to the development of scientific capabilities and skills, and acts as a catalyst to the development of those skills. And I'm sitting here thinking and even sharing with the honorable member next to me that, you know, if I could make it happen, I would say the DSI should actually be a presidential department, for its nature that cuts across all other departments in the in us catching up with the rest of the world in technological advancements. To silo it and keep it as a department that only speaks to a small scope is to limit its capabilities. If I could lobby, I would lobby it to be located in the office of the president. That's so that you can have a forward-looking mandate as it relates to the scope of science in the broadest sense. And I must say that the obsession of the world to actually know the environment outside of the globe and how it may impact on us is well justified. And to play a part in that space is really an honorable thing to do for us. And I want to say, the presentation as it has been made, for me, the key components has been the development of skills, making sure that we have a bigger throughput in as far as postgraduate qualifications as possible. But the location of the project itself, my interest now, and the question I want to ask, which is now a question, is the location of the project. How do you get SMMEs that are black-owned in the main to participate in a project that is so far-flung from almost everything? How is that packaged and made to happen? Because there's a huge investment that has gone into this project as you have presented. And the second question I have is the data center. I heard you speak of a data center that operates in petabytes. Where is it located? I see that you say most of the components of that center were developed and built here with a local company. Where is that company from? Who are the scientists involved in that company? Because it would be something notable to see South Africans being at the cutting edge of technology to cut costs of what is basically a very expensive thing to do. Hardware costs, I would say, would be the most strenuous cost on a project of that magnitude. But how did you get it to happen, and who are these people? I mean, if they've been able to make this thing cost so less, it's a benefit for us. And perhaps it can be replicated elsewhere with some of the data centers we have that carry critical data, national data in other spheres of government. This is why I'm saying the DSI really should be elevated to be a presidential department. That's my personal opinion about it. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mananis.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly as well acknowledge the presentation. Both presentations, they were informative in a sense that you know you had to catch up with whatever that they are saying, and supporting what Yabo has said, but by saying that this particular matter of science and technology is a cost-cutting agenda. So for me, I believe that in each and every department as a unit, you need to identify things that you need to partner with. For instance, with this issue of gender-based violence, Comrade Chairperson, I saw that during WEF, there were commitments made by countries to say they would support gender-based violence with issues of technology to ensure that they make sure that they invent some monies and so on. So I want to check, what is your role as a department with regards to whatever the commitment that has been made, because of the, one of the tools that were identified is that they would use technological advanced tools to ensure that they support gender-based violence. The other thing that I want to speak on is on page 7 and page 8 and 9. In my community, there's one of the beneficiaries of the Masters in Science, and she's a lady, Mpoma Oyi, and that is why I'm saying that when we're presenting, I can identify with some of the things that I know, and I wish we could tell this story even if when there's no crisis. Because with us as South Africans, we would want to tell people that, hey, we are good on 1, 2, 3. When there's no crisis, we cannot go out and tell people to say, you know, in science and technology, these are the things that we are doing. So I want to check if you have plans as a department to tell this story. For instance, in Randfontein, there's a high school that we call Randfontein High, and they are one of the provincial first winners who will be competing on the national competition of science and technology. So I really believe that as department you are doing well. And my question is on the issue of how many schools do you support as this particular department, and where are those schools located? Because in the presentation, we cannot thoroughly see if in our provinces there are people who are benefiting in this particular development, because as we are here as representatives, we don't need just to know that it's because of Northern Cape, it has 1, 2, 3, that is why there will be pilots on them and so on. So I want to check if you've got numbers where we can see that from our spaces, some people are benefiting as well, with regards to community project as well. If you have some highlights, can you tell us perhaps per province, where are those people benefiting, and where is those particular spaces located? The other issues on SMMEs as well. In terms of your demographics, are people benefiting as SMMEs representing the society of South Africa? Or is it this picture that we see of your delegates, that perhaps it's only men who are being supported by this particular department? Lastly, Chairperson, I believe that this department is one of the knowledge development department where we see ideas, skills and experience is being like joined together to ensure that we benefit economically as South Africa. And I would want to suggest that they must take note of what we have said during the budget debate about ensuring that we get even indigenous languages giving us some synopsis in terms of what is this revolution of 4IR. So please, I would want to, you know, say it loud and clear, to say that as much as there's development with regards to science, technology and innovation, we must not undermine the issue of indigenous languages, because it will forever postpone the triple challenges of this country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presenters. I think one is correct if one says this project makes it possible to look into the past. Well, that's actually what it's all about, if I understand correctly. And that's indeed something very remarkable. There are basically two questions that I would like to ask, which might sound like three. The one is, I would just like to know just about when the science and technology budget was tabled in Parliament. New Zealand, what do you call it? It on track. They withdrew from this. Well, it's not a convention yet, but from this convention to be. Why did they do so? Because apparently I can't see any disadvantages in the international sphere to this, but just the newspaper report I saw, they said that the advantages will not weigh up with the cost. So I would just like to have a response to that. And then as a Member of Parliament for the Northern Cape and from the Northern Cape, I have to give exposure to what people from the area tell me. And I hope you will take it in that spirit, that maybe I will give air to some views which are not mine personally, but we have to take it into consideration. It revolves around the long-term economic sustainability of the districts of Williston and Carnarvon, which are affected, which also includes Brandvlei and Van Wyk's Vlei towns. I know that for the first thing, the people whose land was bought, they got good compensation. There are no questions about that. And that the SKA also substantially invests into the schools, even sports grounds, different ways in which to enhance the community life. But the question is the removal of 130,000 hectares from the economy, from productive use, must be replaced by something else. Is the investment in education actually good to make it for these kids possible to make a living somewhere else as a way to not to leave them in the lurk, but to make it possible to go and settle somewhere else and have the knowledge and the skills for that? Or will they be able to put it back into the community? I think if I listen correctly, one could say that the income from agriculture can be replaced by an income in tourism, if I listen correctly, because it doesn't sound to me as if too many of the scientists are going to be based in Carnarvon or Williston. So do we have something like a comprehensive, let's say, economic reinvention or makeover of the area, saying, okay, this used to be a small farming district, now it's going to be a tourism district. I also would like to know the economic activities which Sandparks will be involved with. How would that differ from what farmers used to do? One of the accusations or statements that somebody made from that area is that they said, okay, one of the first actions would be to remove the prosopis trees, which are invaders. And they asked, okay, so what are we going to use to do that? And I said, chainsaws. I said, okay, but that was a problem with farming, that we don't, that kind of machinery isn't allowed near or in the area. Maybe you could just respond to how is it going to manage, and do we have an indication or do we have a plan to say that we are going to replace the economic activity with other economic activity? It seems to me as if most of the job opportunities being created are actually in the construction phase, and in that sense it might be a little bit like a mining development, that as long as the construction goes on there are a lot of opportunities. But it seems to me, you might correct me, that when construction has been done, there's actually not going to be much work to be done over there. So, unequivocally, I think this is to a huge advantage of mankind and of South Africa. I'm just a little bit concerned about the specific districts. Otherwise, if one had to conclude by saying, okay, we are going to sacrifice two districts for the case of science, and we are going to re-educate the people and make it possible to settle elsewhere while they need something to take into mind. And I would just like to request the chairperson that if we visit the area, which I wanted to suggest, but now you have suggested it, so I'm very glad about that, that we also involve some of the community groups to hear what their opposition is. I see there is a memorandum of understanding with AgriNorth Cape, which is actually the most credible community-based organization, I would think. But let's just hear what other people have to say about that in order to allay any possible fears. It's something that I still wanted to say, but I can't remember it, so let's go on.
Okay. You know, I want to understand, Honorable Boshoff, because you did raise it even during the debate. And I'm not getting clear what is... I know that the question is directed to the department, but I also want to understand what is the actual concern of the community there. Is it that the land has been taken away, is going to be used for this, and therefore it's not going to be productive? What were they using on the land? Were they farming? What is the actual concern about the local community?
It is a small farming, small livestock, sheep actually, area where one needs about 5 hectares per small stock unit. At least, maybe even more. So 130,000 hectares was removed from economic activity and all the downstream effects. So these are communities with not too many farmers, individual farming units.
And it's a subsistence arrangement.
Yes.
Not commercial.
So, no, it's commercial. Commercial farmers. The question is the church community still going to be... viable, you know, all these kind of, is the co-op still going to be able to maintain its infrastructure? Because let's say you had so many farmers, now you have 15 less or whatever. So it's the direct influence of 130,000 divided by 5 sheep, which you know, they are not going to the abattoir, and there's not that income for the whole area, but also the community structures, churches, co-ops, associations, all of those, which are contracting. It's already an area where towns are about 100 kilometers from each other. So if, let's say, Williston or Carnarvon isn't really a viable town anymore for anything more than just, let's say, 5 cafes and so on, these people have to go very far. Either Prisca, Kimberley, I know many of those people send their children to schools in Worcester or even in George because of the viability of community life. I don't know if that is clear. The other thing that I wanted to add is that many of the farmers who responded to me said, but when they have these stakeholder conferences or meetings, the people who are there are not always able to give the technical answers to what people from the community ask, and then they say they'll come back, but they never come back. I don't know if it's true. That's the accusation.
Okay. Honorable Keith.
Thank you very much, Chair. Science, and I think we must appreciate the beauty of science, and it's you know, the physics in it, you know, and I think I must start with the, well, of course, I mean, who are here as members of parliament and honorable members representing communities in different areas and who are voted to be here, and there's a certain level of expectation that is when ordinarily people will expect from us. And I want to check just one, the the impact that this whole project of the SKA, right, besides ordinarily being beneficial to the communities that it is there being built, this structure, besides the small businesses, you know, benefiting directly with providing services to the construction and erecting of these infrastructures and all that, besides that, is there any economic, you know, economic value that we can say these projects are really going to be beneficial economically to our people without being complex at the same time, because our people are not that much technical. I understand on the science part of it, it's extremely important that we also become on the same level with other countries out there, which brings me to the second question of science in general. I mean, this conversation we ought to have, because science is a revolution on its own, and it has potential of sparking a whole lot of conversation in the process. I mean, one would ask, how old is this universe? I mean, you know, given the fact that we use all these, you know, the radio telescopes and all that to define and check what is really happening in the galaxy. And, you know, I think even the theory of Einstein on the relativity theory, I mean, he was explaining the complexity of that black hole. I think Einstein predicted it a while ago that there could be a black hole of that nature. But my question here emanates from the assertion that we made, because remember it was the Event Horizon telescope that discovered the clear picture or the clear image of that particular black hole and the activities that are happening essentially there. But I felt like we were not a bit, you know, honest to say, well, who constitutes this EHT? How many of South Africans are there in that research team? Because there's about over 200, if not less, of scientists and researchers from Asia, from Europe, from, well, in Africa. We just to check how many of our people do we have coming directly from here that we have produced, that we can claim that indeed we have something that can show the whole world this is what South Africans have achieved. Well, of course, with the assistance we got from other scientists from different continents and countries. And well, on a lighter note, well, not really on a lighter note, because science on its own, as I have mentioned earlier on, that it's a revolution on its own, it can spark a whole lot of conversation of you know, affecting how we view our society in its own, in essence, Chair. I mean, you know, the religion itself, and one would come and say, but science, it disregards our beliefs in terms of our religion and all that, because science will give you a perspective of how things started, as the DG was explaining the whole thing of the Big Bang theory. While a religious person might have a different view in relation to the entire concept of science, I'm raising this because I want us to be, you know, not to be far away from each other and society at the same time, because we need to carry them through to understand and appreciate the importance of science and how it relates to us. Not them to look or to view science as one of those conspiracy theories that they always read on books and see on movies, but as a reality that they can really appreciate and work around that. I think with ICASA, right, there is collaborations with ICASA, you engage with ICASA, you cooperate with them, because I'm checking in many instances some of these electromagnetic waves and the frequency wave of these radio telescopes might interfere with other communication lines of your you know, that are authorized essentially by ICASA. So we want to check if we do not run any risk of having such a predicament in the process where, you know, our lines are cut, the Wi-Fi is no longer working, the GPS cannot locate where we are going properly because of the entire waves of these dishes that we are erecting. I think I'll stop there, Chair.
Okay.
And Honorable Nodat. Oh, okay. Yeah, and Honorable Lizzie will be the last. Or do you want to take the last spot?
No, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm still trying to find my way out of the dark hole myself. So I won't be very long, don't worry. I'm in the same space as you there. We'll find our way out. First of all, let me thank, good morning to everybody. Let me thank the DG for the presentation. I'm going to come from a more practical perspective in relation to linking the whole phenomenon of science with the practicalities linked to our societies. And it's just a few questions there and there on the presentation. But I appreciate the presentation that I see in terms of how many people have been produced and where they're placed, and I think it's a space that I've expressed quite a lot in the committee that we need to be able to track whatever skills we develop in terms of the contributions we're going to make around science vis-a-vis what we're going to achieve economically. The first question I have is, where do we locate, in which TVET colleges, in which institutions do we locate these studies? Is there a linkage with basic education? I've seen one high school on the presentation, but is there a linkage with basic education studies? And is there a plan or assistance that the department might need to be able to expand these studies around astronomy as a skill that we will develop based on the plans that you've put in place? I mean, you've got plans 2020 to 2025 and beyond that, so that we know that it will be beneficial academically and economically to South Africans, not just limited to the Northern Cape. So that's the question. That's the first question I have. Number two, on the slide presentation, you say this will require the fastest computer ever built. This is where you need to get me out of the dark hole. How will we get this right? Maybe you can explain it a little bit better to me so that I can be able to have a better knowledge of what we're talking about. Number two, you speak about this project being funded by, I just want to get the right page, sorry. Yeah, so you speak about the funds being depleted from the African, I just want to get the right page, I'm not getting the right page.
Renaissance Fund.
Yes. You speak about the funds being depleted in the African Renaissance Fund to be able to continue with the aspect of this being protected politically or not getting any political interference. I just wanted to check, what is the plan around that since the funds are depleted? Do you have any particular plan on how to get that right? And I think I'll just stop there. And I just want to agree with the chairperson that I think for some of us that are new in the committee, even though we read on some of these things and we did science and maths, not that I loved it much, but I mean, I think we're going to have to visit some of these sites to get a better understanding, and the sooner the better, so that me and you can find some light. Thanks.
Okay. Well, now, let's
Zia. No, thank you very much, Chair. Let's welcome the presentation from the department. Also reiterate your opening statement, Chair, that as this committee were beginning to be very sensitive towards this issue of gender, in fact, even the department or the people were meeting yesterday, we made that point very clear. And maybe on a lighter note, the DG and his team, when they were preparing for this, I'm sure at the back of their minds they had AC and they wanted to drown us in it when they were preparing the preparation, the presentation. DG, there are different views that the Meerkat, there are those who hold the view that it's one of the best ever telescope to date. Obviously, there are those who believe that James Webb One, NASA One, is still the best. Because this one performs other functions that most telescopes can't perform, and I'm sure the picture that you showed us is one of those that a few can do. I'm also being told that, or I read somewhere, I can't remember, a while back, that you also discovered the missing gas there. I'm not sure if that is true. It's a rumor. A hydrogen gas there in that galaxy.
Come again?
And I'm saying this telescope also assisted in you discovering a missing gas in that galaxy. The NGC, the new generation catalog of some sort. I was reading it some time back. It will take me some time to recollect. But I wanted to encourage you to continue with as such. Of course, as long as it's what Honorable Boshoff raised, as long as it does not impact negatively on lives of ordinary people, we know that you did not expropriate without compensation land of those people. And that is why those, I'm sure where Comrade Boshoff comes from, differs with the gentleman next to him on the other side, on the land part. But I know you did not expropriate without compensation. You compensated, but long term, are there negative economic issues that may affect those people? But this one uses the electromagnetic waves. Is that what you said? Just like the DSTV one, if I'm not mistaken, this telescope. And this one is a side issue, it's a side question. My question will then be, is it possible then to use such technologies for other things? I'm enhancing on what Comrade Diabo said earlier on, the strategic placement of the department. I was reading a few days ago that an aeroplane, a private jet, landed at O.R. Tambo, causing delays on other planes, private jet. And when those gentlemen came out, the guy was flying that thing said he was dropping a friend who was late for an international flight. So can we use such things to safeguard our assets as a country? I heard in PE there was also a ship that landed there undetected. The police found a roaming mkumbi there with no one in it, and they fetched it and brought. So is this, can these things assist the country in defending the safety of the country? Can we use such things? On the SKA, I don't want to comment much. I tried to read, safe to say that I was very lucky to wake up alive this morning. I think I was drowned there, but at least on this one, Chair, that's the contribution we can do. But next time, maybe you can give it to us 3 weeks before so that we also do some research. Because maybe 5 days was not enough with the level that you put here. But I think you are doing a good job. Thanks.
Okay. So you've got the questions and the comments. I noticed that Honorable Kiete was enjoying this subject very much so in his question. So it looks like he was part of the people who are preparing the presentation. Maybe he wants to show us that he's quite familiar with the subject. I don't know how familiar he is. But yeah, it's science, so what we'll do, we'll break. For what time is it now? 11:30. We will break for 10 minutes. It's actually 11:35. So we'll break for 10 minutes and come back at 11:45 so that you can sort yourself out, DG, together with your team, and then you'll give us the responses when we come back. But it's quite it's not a difficult conversation we're having today, unlike the previous ones. So yeah, tomorrow there's a National Research Foundation Awards. We've made arrangements for committee members to attend. It's in Somerset West. So members, there are arrangements for transport to take you there and bring you back after the awards. Unfortunately, I won't make it for tomorrow. Something cropped up. So let's break, members, for 10 minutes and then we'll come back. And get some responses. We're trying to check who's available for tomorrow. But it looks like members are not available. Who's available for the awards tomorrow? Honorable Gates will represent us there. Yeah. And Honorable Ngobo is available. Yeah, you see, DJ, the timing is quite unstrategic for us. So most members are not available for tomorrow. But I hope the scientific community will understand that members also have got constituencies to service. They are always not here. Some of the members have been here for 2 weeks now without going home. So this is an only opportunity to go and see what's happening in the home front. But Honorable Gates will represent us there. Are you ready with the responses? Okay, let's take the responses.
Yes, thank
Maybe
you.
Maybe if we can also, there could also be a division of labor, you know. People fly all the way to come and talk to us, DG. Please give them an opportunity to say something.
Yes, Honorable Chair, we've divided between, I think, three of us, and then the other two gentlemen are not spare wheel, but they may add if needs be. So the way we've divided the question is that the sort of technical question, Rob will speak to those, so we will probably not go through each and every one, but we're happy at the end, Chair, to check. So questions like the James Webb Telescope and the Meerkat and who's who, Rob will speak about that. The issue of the South African scientists' participation in the EHT, Honorable Gedze, Rob will talk about that. And then he will also talk about the questions Honorable Boshoff requested around the practicalities of the loss of farming opportunities. But also, I think the second part of your question was, how, as a department, are we thinking about the lost opportunities, economic opportunities in the area and new opportunities that are created? He will have a first bite, then I will come back to the bigger issue. So, and then the third part is specific issues around communication laws and the impact of the fact that the area must remain radio quiet and what interventions we have put in place around that. And then I will, the fourth part would be the data center issues, both for the Meerkat, but also the data center issues as well in the international project. But as I go through each and every one in my first bite, I will indicate which questions would be picked up by Dr. Adam. But as a precursor, Chair, we are always grateful for this opportunity, sincerely, because it also helps us to sharpen our thinking or to pick up gaps, if there are any, or on the work that we do. So it's always greatly appreciated, the engagement that that we have with you. So then let me start by saying to the offer from the Chair and some members, we will await the indication from the Secretariat on when you would like to visit the site. We will arrange, the director is here, so we'll be more than happy to arrange. It's a 1-hour, 15-20-minute flight from here, which we have to arrange through the executive jet. So as soon as you are ready, let us know and then we'll make the arrangements. The second offer of visiting the Center for High Performance Computing again, we will speak to Dr. Sithole and he would be more than happy to host the committee in Rosebank in Cape Town. So we will leave the committee to think about where we are best located. We will do the best job we can, whether we are where we are or whether in the presidency. But one of the things that have happened in this new configuration in the sixth administration is we've been asked by the presidency to explain what does innovation mean in the portfolio of work that we're doing. And through a process that the DG and the presidency is leading, we've started to indicate what we can do. And in the decadal plan that we'll be sharing with the committee, we will indicate, I think, what we can do, even if we are not located in the presidency. Four areas we have identified as things that we can do to the South African discussions at the moment. The first one is how we can modernize the economy through science, technology, and innovation, maybe some of the labor-absorbing sector. So that's the one area where we believe we can make a contribution. The second one is areas where we can identify new sources of growth, and we'll be sharing with the committee specifically
including the fourth industrial revolution, where we think on the investments that we have made and that we are making, how we can contribute that. The third area is where science, technology and innovation can improve service delivery, and we have examples, and we have specific areas where in partnership with SALGA, we've already started to demonstrate at local government and provincial level. And then the fourth area is how you use research to inform that the policies that are being implemented are informed by research that's been done. So I think just to respond to Honorable Yabo, yes, I think this is something that we are aware of. This is something that we are more than happy, again, at an appropriate time, to share with the colleague. The details on the participation of black-owned small, medium enterprises and the breakdown of the skills in the project across the center, I'll leave to Rob, but I suspect we may not have all the details here today. So if the chair agrees, we would rather submit in writing the details of the SMMEs that are involved, the breakdown in terms of which ones are black-owned, women-owned, and all of the detail outside the meeting. But if he's got some answers, I'd like him to respond on that. And then the second issue which we have agreed he will respond to is the issue of the data center and the issue of the individuals that have been involved in the computing capability. I think there's another question further down the line that we have at in Karoo and what those skills can do and where they are. I think we know where they are, where they are situated, but what they can do, I think we've already been approached by one of the ministries to look at these skills if they were able to develop this computer with this capability for some application outside. But I do want to say that we have a whole IP, intellectual property commercialization strategy coming out of the project, which again would be more than happy as a follow-up to today to share over and above what I shared is just examples here to the portfolio. In other words, the migration of the activities that come out of the project and where they would be located in the economy. And then the second question, Honorable Mananiso, is we don't have anything yet specific to deal with the gender-based violence. But I was sitting listening to Advocate Badohi yesterday, and one of the things that she indicated as the challenge that they would like the technology to help with is the management of cases in courts. And we think that working with the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research, you can begin to digitize the case management with the IT. So as she was talking, I thought that I will probably have an engagement with the DG of Justice and Constitutional Development as one something specific. Whether that will have a direct application to the gender base or it could be piloted for those, I think it's something that would be more than happy. And it's not something that would take a long time, but of course it depends whether the system would be ready. In fact, even tracking the cases from the time that it's reported, the time during the prosecution, including having tracking that goes when people are in the correctional services and as well as if people get paroled. But this is something that I think conceptually is possible to do to support this, but we're more than happy to perhaps think about the broader support to the gender-based violence through technology. And then the second part of your question was about telling the story of the project. Yes, I think we are aware that we do not do this enough, but I think Rob can also add about, I think somebody writing up about the project itself and the people aspect rather than, you know, the technology and the science aspect. And then also as a third issue, Chair, that we can bring with the details, I assume the schools that are supported and the provinces and the bursary allocation, you are referring to the people that we give bursaries to as part of the SKA specific, not just generally, because if it's SKA specific, again, that's the other breakdown that would be more than happy to give out of the over 1,000 students that get bursaries. And then on the community projects, I would like, Chair, with your permission, that we actually come and do a presentation again, because I thought that was more than just the SKA, because we have done this through the engagement that last year or the year before, I can't remember, we had with the NCOP, the Communication Committee, where we have geographically located all the projects of what we do as a Department of Science and Innovation, geographically indicated where this project is, what is it all about, the entire portfolio. So I would rather, with your permission, that you maybe invite us to come and share, or we can submit that in writing in terms of where we are. We can update that. And then the knowledge for development and skills for the future, I think Rob probably could talk about that. With your permission again, Chair, I'll ask Honorable Boshoff that Rob speaks about the whole challenges of three things that you raised. The first one is the challenges in the farming, and then the second one is whether we have a comprehensive plan around the economic losses and the opportunities as a result of the presence of the project, and the issue of sand parks and what would be happening, because I think they work fairly closely with them. We do take the point that is being raised about the effectiveness of the engagement with the stakeholders. The Minister has also expressed interest in getting involved in this, and I think together with the project, one of the ideas that I think we had is that we would like to also to visit at our level and the Minister's level. So we're not so sure whether that would happen before you visit or whether we do, but we also just want to make sure that if there are gaps in the communication and in the stakeholder engagement that we might not be aware of, let's strengthen that. So we'd be more than happy to strengthen that element. Honorable Gitte, the impact of the whole project beside community, yes, we think that outside the scientific returns, as we indicated in the technology returns, there are technologies that are developed in the project, but these have the possibility of being deployed elsewhere in the economy, and with a specific reference in the fourth industrial revolution, both in the skills as well as in the industries that could be, if you like, created out of this. Now, if the question is, are they at the scale that we would like it to be, and are we thinking about embedding some of those ideas so that they can be at scale with the other departments, the answer is yes. We've started to engage, for instance, on some of these in the reimagining of the industrialization with the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, around how these can be embedded in the reimagining of the industrial policy. And as I say, with the skills that I think we are generating, we are now part of the DAGT, and the Minister said, how can you scale this up, and how can these initiatives be given the impact that they desire? We are working with the Presidency on the work that we are doing for training young data scientists with degrees with the Harambee, a non-governmental organization, on what is the scalability of some of this work that we've been doing. So, yes, they have the potential to do that, and we are working with other government departments. When we have completed, I think, those initiatives, we would be more than happy to come and share with the committee. On the funding side, maybe we haven't talked about this. I'm happy to ask Rob to talk about the amount of money that will flow into the country, of course, because of once the telescope is built, it needs to be operated. So operating the telescope requires certain skills, and because the telescope will not be our telescope when it becomes part of the SKA Phase 1, we will get, I think, notional number is about 10-15% of the cost of building the telescope is the amount that you need in order to run the telescope. So there's a specific returns that would come to the country. And then the third one, of course, fourth, is that as part of this work and as part of what I think Rob talked about these technologies, we have now formed partnership with some of the multinational companies that have an interest in developing these technologies with ourselves. At Nelson Mandela University, one of the multinational companies has set up a center for broadband communication. And we will be working with that center for broadband communication to look at alternative broadband, the next generation of broadband infrastructure that will not only be for the SKA, but for the country as well, and the skills that are needed for networking technology. So hopefully that gives you a flavor of the benefits of the project. What we cannot say here is, can we quantify it into rands and cents for overall? Maybe we've not done that, and this is something that we'll be more than happy to do. I do know that one of the teams between the department and the SKA were asked to probably quantify that in much more detail, and we'll be more than happy to share those details with the committee. And then Rob will talk, Honorable Getz, on the EHT and the involvement of South African. This is the work that was done about the black hole, and so he will talk about that. And also about ICASA and the partnership with the former Department of Communication and now Digital Technologies on alternative technologies to make sure that the communication infrastructure in the area and people don't get affected. Rob will speak about that. The one chair that I apologize to Honorable Getze would be difficult for me to respond to is the link between religion and science. What we can do as the scientific community is to try and do the best we can to try and understand the things that we can understand and provide that as facts. I do know that sometimes the how people use that fact in order to link with religion, it's something that's very difficult for us to communicate. I also myself battle between that first point on that graph and the religion that I think I'm familiar with. I'm not able to even reconcile that. So I think it would be rather difficult for me. And then Honorable Nodata, skills for the future. Yes, I think the project has provided us with that. But I think the question also goes to say, can we expand this beyond the SKA? As I've said, this whole program of the data scientists and the skills that are being trained, and of course the other skills in the technology development, is part of the reimagining the industrialization. But we are having discussion with our colleagues on basic education, because I think that was the third dimension to your question. And one of the things that they've requested us to partner with them on is about discussing the curriculum for coding, for instance, as the skills that will be required in the future. We've also had a discussion with them. They have started to say they would like to have special schools in some of the scientific or technological areas, and they would like to partner with us to support them in those areas, maritime related activities, ICT related schools focusing on that. So what we could do, if the committee has an interest, once that process has been completed with our colleagues on basic education on these discussions, because I think the second meeting after I met with the DG was about 3 weeks ago, we would be more than happy to spell out exactly where these special schools are going to be and what is the support we'll be providing and which areas for the preparing young kids for the future are going to be. So there's work that's happening in this area. Rob will talk about the fastest computer ever built and where are the skills and whether this can be replicated elsewhere. I'll ask Dan to talk about the depleted funds that we had sourced from the African Renaissance Fund, and what's the plan going forward. And then the last from me were a set of issues from Honorable Letsie. Rob will talk about the James Webb and Meerkat and gas in the galaxies. Perhaps we'll talk about that. And then I do want to, the people's life are not affected. I think you will also touch on that, on specific technologies. The radio waves are specific in the spectrum, and that's what I showed there. What we have at the, just to illustrate, at the Central Cape Peninsula University of Technology, is they have developed what is called a CubeSat. So it's a satellite that is about a cubic centimeter. And what this CubeSat does is it orbits from north to south pole. And what it does is it sends signal. I don't know the frequency range, but I think conceptually it's the same thing. And if you have certain frequencies, you can use them for different applications, because I thought that was the question. So you can send a signal on the sea, and then by law, the ships that are on our seas must have a transponder that responds to, within a particular frequency, to satellite tracking. So that if you see a ship with a satellite imagery, but it's not responding through a transponder, then you can send the Coast Guards to find out what is that ship doing and why is it not responding through a signal that you should pick up from the satellite. So they've been doing this, and I think real life, again, we can come and do a presentation. We can show you along the East Coast and the West Coast, in fact, all the way up to Somalia, all the ships that are on the sea, live. And that helps us, for instance, to see, you know, ships that are illegal and the ships that are there. And we are now putting, I think, a second and a third constellation of satellite, because it takes some time for the satellite to come back to monitor. So people get to know about these things, and when you have a constellation that, because they are orbiting all the time, you are able to sort of don't have a gap between the time that the satellite passes along our coastline to be able. So there are applications, not directly from the project, but just from the other work that we're doing with the space agency, that can be utilized for other applications, this particular one. I think the space agency is also working with the airports company of South Africa to see whether they can assist in the, it's not actually the monitoring of the plane, but it's to assist in the landing of the planes using a different system, which is called an EGNOS system, to monitor all the planes, and we are able to prevent accidents for the planes to be able to land properly. So these are applications that are not directly coming from here, but that have the same kind of satellite frequency communication with the application using satellite. So, Chair, I think that's where I'd like to stop and then hand over to Dr. Adam. But maybe we can start with Dan on the African Renaissance Fund quickly, and then we hand over to Dr. Adam.
Okay. Who's going to answer that question about one country pulling out of the convention? You'll do that, Dr.
Thank you, DG, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll indeed start with the New Zealand question, and indeed the Honourable Member is correct that after having participated over many years in the design phase of the telescope and even the negotiation of the convention, New Zealand decided not to sign the convention and participate in the construction and operational phases of the project. That was a decision informed by New Zealand's own science priorities, and in terms of where it wants to invest its budget. It was very importantly not a statement, and the New Zealand government made clear of a lack of confidence in the project. It was purely informed by national budgetary considerations. It was received with disappointment by the rest of the global partnership, but with respect, and also New Zealand would certainly acknowledge that it is not a significant setback of any kind for the project, because both the financial and technical contribution by New Zealand to the project was also always going to be extremely small. And it has been offset by increased international interest in the project, for example, by the government of Portugal, who did not even participate in the negotiations of the convention, but was so confident in the project that it actually signed the convention, which it had no participation in actual drafting of its terms. We've seen the investment by Germany and others in the Meerkat extension. And then perhaps just to conclude, in good diplomacy, one never interrogates the sovereign decision of another government. But just some context for the New Zealand decision, which will be factual. And I should say that this decision was contested in New Zealand, but of course a decision respected. In the first instance, New Zealand will not host any actual infrastructure of the project. The historical origin for New Zealand's involvement in the project was it was associated with the Australian bid to host the telescope. And the honourable members may remember there was this bidding contest between South Africa and Australia. And as South Africa involved other African partner countries to extend the baseline of its telescope offering, Australia did the same with New Zealand. The actual site decision took away the need for any infrastructure to be located in New Zealand. So that is an important consideration. Secondly, one of the most important returns on investment for any government to invest in a project is the scientific return. And again, with respect, that New Zealand will acknowledge they have a very small radio astronomy community. And I think perhaps I'm a government official, so can't take credit, but one of the aspects our government should take credit for is over many, many years, a radio astronomy community. So the actual scientists will use the SKA. And what South Africa has done since 2002 has been consistently to invest and grow a community of African and South African radio astronomers so that we are not like, for example, Chile, which hosts global radio telescopes but have a very small actual community who use it. And then lastly, the other return on investment is for technology development of your enterprises. And again, within that context, from a New Zealand budgetary perspective, they just thought, given their own circumstances, this is not the best way they should be investing their money now. So it was a disappointing decision, but not significantly negative in any manner for the project. And we continue to maintain very cordial and positive relations with the New Zealand government. We, for example, just for interest, had an extensive workshop on the impact of agriculture as a source for greenhouse gases as a contributor to climate change. And then the SKA is a long-term project. It will be there for 50 years, and there's ample time for New Zealand to revise its decision should it so wish. And then just on the African Renaissance Fund, this, for the honourable members, may recall, this is an instrument from DIRCO, the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, for programs the South African government funds in other African countries to contribute to socio-economic development in other countries and to strengthen, indeed, South Africa's relations with other African countries. Very much an instrument to advance our foreign policy in Africa. And DIRCO has been supporting the African Very Long Baseline Interferometry Network, the AVN, which was referred to, this, if you'd like for a better word, capacity-building effort in other African states for radio astronomy in order to host one day the SKA. The current funding cycle has come to an end, and we are engaging with DIRCO intensively about further funding. And I think also I was yesterday privileged to be part of the discussions also in terms of the current perspectives on the need for South Africa to intensify its partnership with African partner countries. We think the value proposition of investment for South Africa to contribute to scientific capacity development in our African partner countries is a compelling one, which renders us optimistic for continued access to those funds.
Thank you, Chair, and I hope I'm able to keep track of all of the questions the DG delegated to me. If I haven't, then I'll be reminded by whoever feels they have not been answered. So we can begin with the data and computing issues. One of the questions under consideration for the location of the SKA data center is whether to put it in the Northern Cape or in the Western Cape. And there are different considerations here. In the Northern, originally the thinking was that in the Northern Cape you have issues of providing power, whereas in the Western Cape that's less an issue. But if the processing happens in the Western Cape, you've got to transfer the data from the Northern Cape to the Western Cape. And so there's that trade-off which hasn't quite been resolved yet. Originally the idea was that power costs would always go up, data costs would always go down. So with that argument, you generate the data in the Northern Cape and you transfer it to where the power is. However, renewables costs have gone down radically. And that question's come up again. At this stage, today, I'm unable to give an answer as to exactly which way it will jump. With Meerkat, this is the SKA precursor. We do data process storage in both the Northern Cape and the Western Cape with a 20 gig per second line going down from the site down to the Center for High Performance Computing, which you'll be visiting in Mowbray. So in the Karoo itself, we have the fastest computer in Africa, 1.5 petaflops. The reason for that is to reduce the data. There's huge torrents of data coming off 2 terabits a second coming out of the antennas into the correlator, which is the machine which adds up all the different signals from the different antennas to give you a coherent picture. That data has to be processed and then either stored on site or shipped down to Center for High Performance Computing in Cape Town. Now, in developing this data storage and data processing capability, we have developed tremendous in-house talent and capability for dealing with data and computing. One of and I was fortunate enough to be involved in this project from a long time back in different roles. And I remember one of the original statements made to Cabinet regarding the advantage of South Africa hosting the SKA. And that was that, well, if the world puts big investments into a project which is cutting edge, and you put good people into it, other stuff is going to come out. In the same way that you had coming out of the Apollo program in the United States, Silicon Valley, and out of CERN came the internet, and out of Australian radio astronomy came Wi-Fi. Out of the SKA will come other technologies, and our prediction was that those technologies would be in big data. And that prediction is already happening. We have put together a team which, and I'll give you an idea of a computer that size, that speed, if you bought it off the shelf from one of the major vendors, would probably cost in the region of 400 million rand. What did we pay for it? Around about 40 to 50 million. Why the big decrease in cost? Well, that's because we used our own skills. We bought the boxes, the actual processes off the shelf through open tender process. And then the people that we've employed and trained over the years were able to configure this hardware in such a way that this was the computer that would be best aimed at these problems. And what that, I think, has given us is a kind of a power to apply this across other platforms. You know, whether it's in climate modeling or whatever applications, drug design, even banking or security, that those same talents can be deployed across those applications. And so that's the power that I think we've of a technological nature that's come out of this. With respect to black-owned companies, One can divide this into two parts. Firstly, there is the so-called low-tech part, where in the Northern Cape we've used in construction of the road a number of small black-owned construction companies. There's catering, there's a whole range of services. But in the high-tech space, this has been a little trickier. There are, and we can provide lists of companies that have benefited, but we apply the DTI codes, and in our procurement processes, we're usually involved with companies to get them to apply these codes at particular levels. As you'll be aware, the emphasis in the codes has changed from training to equity, ownership, management, etc., and that's we're aiming this. Well, I can think of one. I guess one shouldn't name companies here, but I can certainly think of one, Kutling Engineering, which is a high-tech Joburg-based, black-owned and black-managed company, which we've been involved with. But you know, I prefer to, if that's acceptable, provide more detailed written response, which would not simply rely on my memory, but would rely on the database that we put together. Moving on to the issue of lost opportunities in the Northern Cape. Now, it's true that we have bought, I think it's 133,000 hectares of commercial farmland that until a few years ago was used to farm sheep. Different estimates say that we've taken, as a result of this, between 10 and 20 million rand a year out of the Northern Cape sheep farming economy. The question is, what did we put back into it? And if you cast your mind back to the DG slide over the last... As a result of buying 130,000 hectares of farmland that once had sheep on it, we have, as a result, taken money out of the sheep farming economy. That's undeniable. But what have we done to mitigate that? Well, we've counted that well over 400 million rand since the project started. And that wasn't 20 years ago. If you divide 400 by 20, you get 20. So per year, we've put more back into that economy than will be taken out. It's been put into different areas. It's been put into road building. It's been put into catering. It's been put into repairing vehicles. We have trained also local people in technologies such as fiber splitting and binding. For optical fibers. We have a technical training school attached to the project. This technical school is also linked to FUT colleges and the whole tertiary educational training system. We give bursaries. And in particular, it's our firm belief that using local people to do maintenance, to provide services, is more sustainable than bringing them in from Cape Town or Durban or Joburg or whatever. If you put somebody from Joburg in that area for a year, it can be difficult because they're not used to it. Whereas, you know, local people are obviously used to it because they grew up there. Just to give you a number to work with, I think the DG did touch on this. This is roughly a billion euro project. In any project, any observatory in particular, astronomical observatory, roughly 10% of the capital costs are spent in operating the facility annually. So if you take 10% of a billion euros, you get 100 million euros a year. let's say half of that's between split between Australia and South Africa. That leaves 50 million euros. Obviously, some of it will be spent in employing scientists and engineers who are located in the headquarters in the UK. But even for argument's sake, let's take a very low percentage. Let's say 20% is spent locally. That's 10 million euros. 10 million euros is about 150 million rand. That's more than the 20 million a year we've taken out in terms of sheep farming. Even if it is 20, it's probably more like 15 or so. So I'm trying to give some sense of relative contribution. What it will certainly do is change the economy and the society in the Northern Cape. In the same way that if you go a couple of hundred kilometers away, the Northern Cape is a huge province. If you look at a keep and Springbok, Nababib, in the Northern Cape, that community and the skills in that community have been tremendously changed by mining. The average person there is average family there will have members of that family employed in the mining industry, which is different from farming. Where I'm going with this is that there's been a diversification as a result of that. Similarly, in the Carnarvon area, there is a diversification taking place. With respect to sandparks, we're currently in discussions with them as to exactly how the management would take place in such a way that it's consistent with radio frequency interference avoidance. You mentioned the prosopis. I don't have an answer for that. I'm sure there is one. Use diesel-powered bulldozers or something. I don't know. You'd have to find a solution that was consistent with the objectives of the Astronomy Geographic Advantage Act. It's not impossible, it just requires a bit of thinking. With respect to the question about ICASA and our working with them, of course we work very closely in terms of frequency allocation. One of our staff members, in fact, is the chief South African representative in the spectrum allocation meeting in Geneva. Who assists the Department of Telecoms and also ICASA. However, to come back to the fundamental question about the impact of the regulations on communications, the South African Constitution, I think, is clear that if you take something away from somebody, you've got to give something equivalent back to them. And that's what we are currently involved in, is looking at which technologies can be substituted for ordinary GSM communication, because the GSM frequency, as it stands, can interfere with what we're attempting to measure. It's not that what we're measuring interferes with that, was stated. It's that in certain areas, provision of a cell phone signal would interfere drastically with what we're trying to observe. So what we then are doing is working with the community, the Academy of Sciences and the Academy of Engineering to come up with state and with a range of private sector companies to come up with the best solutions for this. I mean, you simply operate at a different frequency. The issue is, do you go for high frequency or do you go for low frequency? And there are different technical issues with them. It's not an insoluble problem. It's a question of which is the best solution. And what I've said to the communities there is that we will find the best solution to mitigate that. To get on to the issue of James Webb telescope versus Meerkat, well, they're both excellent instruments. The difference is that the James Webb is an optical telescope like SALT in Sutherland, whereas the Meerkat is a radio telescope. So the optical telescope looks at light, and the radio telescope picks up radio waves, and you detect different phenomena, or different aspects even of the same phenomenon, with those two different frequencies. So the one's not better than the other. They're both good, and they're different. The EHT, There was South African involvement in that publication. There was a young professor by the name of Roger Dean at Pretoria University, whose name was on the paper. Roger Dean came out of the bursary program that we ran through SK in South Africa. We developed him, at least he developed himself funded by us, shall I say. But he, I think, is a success story of the human capital development program that we put in place. Thank you for noticing the publication with respect to the missing mass in 4NXA galaxy, the missing hydrogen. That was a nice one. It was an outstanding puzzle, because if hydrogen wasn't there, then that would change the possibilities for how galaxies evolve. Our current understanding would be wrong. It turns out that they found the hydrogen, and so the way that we currently see things is right. So that was the scientific interest in that. You asked about, I forget, the funding issue, or what was that?
You've covered everything.
If I haven't, then I'll happily go back.
The only thing, Chairperson, that if we had time, we would also do for both Honourable Boshoff and Honourable Gertz's question about the overall impact financially and otherwise. I do know that Denny has been our representative at the CERN, the European Nuclear Research Organization, and they've conducted a study, Denny, that looks at the impact of the location of this facility in Geneva. And I think something that we may want to do at some point is to use exactly the same methodology to quantify in all aspects the impact of the square kilometer array. But as I say, because we've run out of time, we'd be more than happy to share the methodology and how they've quantified it. Sometimes you learn from how others have done these kinds of analyses. And then on a lighter note, if Honorable Gates tomorrow is at the awards, we will be there to make sure he's well looked after.
Okay. No, he has got he studied in engineering, so hence he's got a passion around these things, physics and so forth. So it's a good rep to represent us there. Please don't do it when you arrive there. You will be meeting with the a different audience there. But yeah, just by the way, you submitted a bid and you're competing against Australia. To whom did you submit this bid? Who was handling that?
Well, before the, I think it's the SKA organization board. So there was a board, and of course the way that the bids were processed, they had a science and technical committee that evaluated both our bids and South Africa and Australia. And then we went there, I think it was in London, where we presented and then documentation of all what they needed. But just to explain, commitment of government. And then
yes, I'm trying to figure out what is the controlling body internationally, because I think that would be the body that would be was responsible, or was there something that was set up ad hoc? Or
it was the board representing the countries at the time that were interested in the SKA.
Okay.
The board of the current company, so they are the controlling, and then they then may also, after they've taken decision, it had to be ratified by the members. So the members of the countries that were involved. So they were informed, this is the decision of the board, this is how it came about, and then the members then accepted this.
All right. So that's that, members. I hope members have been clarified. There was detailed explanation that was given for the questions that members have raised. So, yeah, we can only say to keep up the good work. of the SKA. It's quite a very interesting work that you are doing. We'll come and visit you there, learn more about this. Obviously, the country has taken a decision to bid, successfully has been awarded, is implementing it. I'm sure there were questions around the capacity to implement such a huge project in South Africa, but with the good doctor here, let me just make sure, Dr. Adam, we must make sure we get young scientists. Please pass on the skills and the knowledge that you have in a younger generation, so that as you age, you don't go with that knowledge. So employ more young scientists in your team.
To say something about that, because the age is a recurring theme in all the days, and I'm very much in favor of young scientists and young people of any kind. But a disproportionate number of Nobel Prize winners are above the age of 70. And I think we are disregarding the value of decades of experience by always asking for people. I mean, it's like it's becoming something bad to have age.
No. You are approaching it from the negative side. You must approach it from the positive side. The positive side argues for investment in the future. You see? So when you invest in the future, we start by investing in young people. Because young people are the future. At some point, you're a young person yourself. And you still are. And most of the time when you generate knowledge and interest in subjects is when you are young. That's when you select, I'm going to go into this stream, I'm going to go into this stream, and this is what I'm going to do. So all what you're saying is that invest in the young people so that they can be the future. We're struggling with academics currently, which are at the average, in average terms, they are at another age, and they are exiting the system, and they can't be replaced. Most of the professors in universities are old. So we're saying invest in young people so that they can be able to sustain the kind of knowledge production that the country is busy with. So there's nothing wrong in being an old person. I am old too. I'm not young anymore, so there's nothing wrong. But the issue is that let's look at the future. So, yeah, we'll... I think what needs to be done, DG, you must fast track this process of bringing us the the convention. It's very important that South Africa must be one of those first to ratify the convention, because we are hosting this thing here, so that we can demonstrate our commitment. I mean, the signing ceremony was in March, represented by Minister Kubai Ngubane, and it will be said that this year comes to an end without us ratifying that convention. So please bring it to us. We'll start with the process. But otherwise, thank you very much for coming. It was a very good and enlightening engagement. Thank you very much, honorable members. The colloquium, as we said, has been postponed. It's no longer taking place on Friday. It's going to be on the... Eh?
Tuesday the 17th, which is next week, eh? Which is next week, Tuesday. So we will meet on Tuesday next week. Have a lovely weekend. Travel back home safe. So the meeting is adjourned.